Deutsche Welle Africa Link.
Welcome to Africa Link. I'm Isaac Mugabe, your host. Coming up on the program, Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta pays tribute to the policeman killed in a car bomb attack in Nairobi.
Were it not for the diligence of those two officers, many innocent lives would have been lost.
Nigeria's President Goodluck Jonathan meets with the country's governors to discuss the worsening security situation in the country. We hear from an expert.
People must support government in this regard. It is not a partisan issue, it's a Nigerian issue. This is a war against the people.
Also on the program, we'll bring you the second part of our Crossroad Generations drama, The Promised Land, a story of African migration to Europe. Don't miss out.
Top story.
President Uhuru Kenyatta of Kenya has paid tribute to the policeman killed by a car bomb that exploded outside a police station in Nairobi on Wednesday evening. The station is located near the district of Isli, which has a large population of ethnic Somalis. Also on Thursday, police discovered another explosive-laden vehicle near a high school close to the Pangan police station, the site of Wednesday's night bombing. James Shimanyula reports.
Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta has strongly condemned suspected terrorists believed to be involved in a spate of explosions that have occurred in the country, especially in the capital Nairobi and the coastal city of Mombasa. At least 9 incidents using either grenades or improvised explosive devices have been reported by police in Nairobi over the past 6 months, resulting in the deaths of more than 20 people. In Mombasa, an attack on a church left 6 people dead. It was followed by the killing of 3 suspected Al-Shabaab supporters following the government's new order to police to shoot and kill such people on site. Earlier, police said they had foiled a major terrorist plot after arresting 2 men driving a car laden with explosives. On Thursday, President Kenyatta attended a passing-out parade for more than 1,700 members of the paramilitary police. He paid tribute to the 2 policemen who were killed on Wednesday night at Nairobi's Pangani police station.
Were it not for the diligence of those 2 officers, Police Constable Francis Murage and Police Constable Samuel Cheptuk, and their other 2 comrades who survived, many innocent lives would have been lost. Many diligent, courageous, and good officers have made the ultimate sacrifice and given their lives in the defense and protection of life and property.
Before the explosion, police intercepted a suspicious car 100 meters from the station. As they escorted the driver and his companion to the station for interrogation, the car exploded, killing them and the 2 policemen. When I reached the scene of the explosion just a few minutes after it occurred, a crowd had already gathered. Here are some of their comments.
This is a very terrible scene.
Let's pray for the Kenyans. Let's be prepared for whatever is going around our country. We should be very careful. Whenever you go to shopping, we should be very careful. My feeling about this is just we should be careful. That's all.
On Thursday, there were reports that another vehicle filled with explosives had been found at a school near the same police station. Police spokesman Masood Munyi told DW that important preliminary leads were being investigated. Wednesday's fatal bombing was preceded by a major soup at Isli, resulting in the detention and screening of more than 3,000 people. The soup, which began at the end of last month, led to the deportation of more than 100 Somalis to Mogadishu, with 412 others returned to refugee camps in northeastern Kenya. Dozens of others face charges of being in Kenya illegally. Their cases will come up for hearing next month.
James Shimanyula reporting. Before we came on air, I spoke to Dr. Laura Hammond, Senior Lecturer in Development Studies at SOAS in London, and I started by asking her who could be behind this attack.
I think the difficulty in Kenya right now is that the public at large and the Kenyan authorities in general see no difference between the Al-Shabaab movement and the very sizable refugee population living in the country. So the important question is who will be blamed ultimately for this attack, and I'm afraid that it tends to be Somali refugees as well as Somali Kenyan citizens who are living in the country.
The Al-Shabaab have warned the Kenyan government to pull out its forces from Somalia if it wants to see an end to attacks on its territory. Do you see Kenyan authorities relenting to this kind of demand?
Certainly, Kenya is not going to respond to the demands of Al-Shabaab in any way whatsoever. But I think that these kinds of attacks just strengthen their resolve to stay in the country. They still believe that Al-Shabaab can be defeated militarily. That's an issue which is open to question. But they are not at all likely to reconsider their involvement in Somalia, I don't think.
But then could this latest attack increase pressure on the government from the Kenyan people themselves to pull out from Somalia?
Some people will think that they should, in a sense, cut their losses and leave the country. But I think most Kenyans will probably feel that having Kenya involved in Somalia actually is necessary for their own security, in a sense, that if they withdraw back into Kenya, that Shabaab will continue to export its terror attacks into Kenya even more so. So it's better to have Kenya fighting Al-Shabaab inside Somali territory than doing so more inside Kenyan territory.
Somali Kenyans say they expect further police clampdowns to follow attacks such as the car bomb blast. Now, do you think such clampdowns would work in favor of the Kenyan government?
I think that they work in a way, in the sense that the Kenyan population, the Kenyan public, sees the government having a strong response. The concern is that they're responding against the wrong parties, punishing refugees and Kenyan citizens who are themselves victims of the aggression of Al-Shabaab. I think the more people see the sort of unfairness of the ways in which innocent women and children, people who are in quite precarious physical health, are being rounded up, detained, and in some cases deported or sent to live in refugee camps, that may have a sort of backlash effect on popular support for what's happening.
And could this attack on the police station be in retaliation to the recent crackdown on the Somali community in Kenya by security forces?
I'm sure that it is. I think that the crackdown helps to harden opinion amongst those who might not themselves already be violent extremists. It strengthens the hand of Al-Shabaab rather than weakens it by making people feel that they have no other option than to join the so-called opposition. So I think that this is in direct response to the treatment of Somali citizens.
I was speaking to Laura Hammond from SOAS in London.
Africa Link, because Africa is more than just a headline.
President Goodluck Jonathan on Thursday met with Nigeria's 36 state governors to discuss the worsening security situation in the country. The meeting comes at a time when efforts to rescue more than 200 schoolgirls abducted by Boko Haram militants last week have not yielded much. For more on the meeting, I spoke to DW's Nonye Agaji in Abuja.
So many people are worried that the situation is getting worse. So the state governors, both for the PDP and other governors, every state governor is supposed to be part of this, in addition to the security chiefs. The major thing people are looking at, are they actually going to address the issue of emergency in some of the states? The emergency situation ended sometime within the month, and people are looking at, is it going to be extended or not?
And what do the governors think of President Goodluck Jonathan's strategy of ending the attacks by the Boko Haram in the country?
Every state governor has his own view about this. But the issue of emergency, most of the affected governors, talking about the northeastern governors, they are not comfortable with the state of emergency that is making it total. And some of them have voiced out against it.
The military has called for the suspension of the governors of Adamawa, Borno and Yobe states with a view to imposing total emergency rule. What else can you tell us about this?
The military is saying this from their own point of view, but the governors cannot take it that way because they see themselves as having been elected. Therefore, they want that executive power to take care of their states. But some other people are seeing it other way. They are actually saying that if this is going to work, whether emergency rule or not, the major thing is that the people must support the government in terms of sharing information. Just like Ifeanyi Nwachukwu was telling me a few minutes ago, he is a security analyst.
People must support government in this regard. It is not a partisan issue. It's not a PDP against any other person. It's a Nigerian issue. Everybody should be involved in this, even from the market women to the housewives, to the farmers, to the community leaders, to the youth leaders. Everybody must volunteer information. This is a war against the people. So the people must take it as their own warfare so that at the end of the day, we have overall victory over terrorism.
That was Ifanyi Nwachukwu, a security expert in Abuja, and I was speaking to Nonya Agaji. It's now time for a special series on South Africa ahead of celebrations to mark 20 years after the end of apartheid. The story of apartheid is also the story of those who fought against it. Soon after the white minority government started to introduce apartheid laws in the 1920s, black and coloured South Africans started to organise themselves and fight for freedom. The white government answered by banning anti-apartheid groups, arresting their leaders and using force to stop protest rallies, sometimes even shooting and killing protesters. Christian Roman takes a look at the story of the anti-apartheid movement in South Africa, and he starts with South Africa's greatest freedom hero.
Let us stretch out our hands to those who have beaten us and to say to them, we are all South Africans. We have had a good fight, but now this is the time to heal the old wounds and to build a new South Africa.
In 1994, the year when Nelson Mandela became the first black president of South Africa, the old wounds he referred to bore witness to those who fell victim to the apartheid system. For almost a century, liberation movements had fought against racism and segregation in South Africa. Who were those who resisted? When apartheid became law in 1948, the African National Congress, ANC, strove to participate in the all-white-dominated political system. But now a young generation around Mandela was questioning that system and claiming the leadership of the country for the black population. Historian Christoph Marx explains.
They were people who grew up not in mission stations like the older generation of the ANC, but within the townships. And therefore they shared the experience of everyday discrimination with the mass of the black population there.
The ANC soon became the major force opposing the regime's oppression of South Africa's non-white population. In the 1950s, the Freedom Charter was passed, a counterdraft to the racist apartheid system. But the political cloud of the ANC came to a sudden end in 1960 in the township of Sharpeville. Policemen opened fire on a crowd of demonstrators. 69 were killed, hundreds injured. Shortly afterwards, the apartheid regime banned the ANC as an illegal organization, and Mandela was sentenced to life imprisonment. Christoph Marx again.
The ANC virtually disappeared from the scene in South Africa. It went into exile, and it took them quite a long time to re-establish itself, to build up new structures.
The turning point did not come until 1976. When thousands of black children in Soweto outside Johannesburg demonstrated against the Afrikaans language requirement for black students, the police opened fire with tear gas and bullets. The protests and government crackdowns that followed put South Africa in the international spotlight. By 1989, the National Party government of P.W. Botha was pressured to step aside in favor of Frederick Willem de Klerk. He quickly set the course for reforms, and after only 4 months in office, he announced a new constitution and legalized all banned political parties. Then came this statement.
I wish to put it plainly that the government has taken a firm decision to release Mr. Mandela unconditionally.
For Christoph Marx,
there was no one who was more convincing than him, because he spent 27 years in prison and he came out and was prepared to forgive the people who put him there.
That willingness to forgive characterized Mandela's later career. Apartheid was gradually dismantled in a series of negotiations between the ANC and de Klerk's government. On April 27, 1994, its fate was sealed.
Christian Roman reporting.
Deutsche Welle, learning by ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Hi there and welcome to Crossroads Generation. You've tuned in at exactly the right time. Today we start our second season called Facing the Consequences.
We're standing at the crossroads. We're looking for our way. Crossroads Generation. Our future stands today.
Sit back, relax, and listen to what happens to Mercy, Dan, and Nikki. For those who haven't met them yet, these three African teenagers are all in the same class at Bongo Academy High School. And they've all been through a lot in the last weeks. Mercy Msoto comes from a poor family, but got to go to Bongo Academy thanks to a scholarship. Her classmate Nikki Jumbe was immediately attracted to her, but Mercy didn't return his affection.
Nikki, I have to tell you something.
Yes, anything. I'm listening with my ears, my heart, everything.
Nikki, I think I like...
I like you too, Mercy.
I think I like Dan. I'm sorry, Nikki.
Nikki was devastated when Mercy chose Dan Kanyama over him. But for Mercy and her family, life hasn't been all sunshine and flowers either. Mercy's younger twin brothers, Kadu and Banda, have just returned home from the neighboring country, Laboria, where their aunt Lena was supposed to be taking care of them. But the family reunion didn't last long. Mercy's father, Msoto, has been arrested by the police on suspicion of robbery with violence. And on top of all that, Mercy's discovered that she has another problem.
Dan, I'm pregnant.
I am not responsible, and I am not ready to be a father.
You can't do this to me, Dan.
But it seems Dan can. His father wants him to leave Bongo Academy and go back to his home country, Laboria. The perfect chance to evade his responsibilities, isn't it? A few weeks have gone by since we last heard from Dan and all the others. Let's find out what's been going on. This first episode is called What Will I Do? Let's join Mercy and her friend Trudy during break at Bongo Academy.
Oh, Trudy, what am I going to do? What will I tell my parents? What will people say?
Mercy, calm down. I told you before, there's a very easy solution to this.
Dan hasn't talked to me since the day I told him I was pregnant. Before that, he said he was crazy about me. Why is he doing this to me?
Mercy, my friend. That's what they all say. Boys just want one thing from us. And once they get it, they dump us. Like my ex-boyfriend, Manoti, the bus conductor. He dumped me after he got what he wanted. And he infected me with a sexually transmitted disease. But enough of that. I think you should make up your mind soon to, you know...
Trudy, I'm really not comfortable doing... You know what? Besides, where would I even get the money to pay Dr. Zito?
Ask Dan. I'm sure he'll be willing to help. After all, he doesn't want people to know that he's responsible. I mean, he's given you money before, hasn't he?
I don't know, Trudy. I'm not sure.
Listen, Mercy. Do you want to be a mother and miss out on being young? Think about all the boys who would suddenly be calling you Mama. They'll never go out with you again. Never. And what about school? You'll never...
All right, stop. Just let me think about it, okay?
I really need to speak to my father. These internet calls, sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. I hope he's online. Yes. Hi, Dad. Dad.
Dan?
Yes, Dad.
Hello, son.
Hello.
Aren't you in class?
No, we're on a break, Dad. Did you book my flight back home? You keep telling me you'll take care of it, but...
Dan, I'm afraid I don't have good news for you. Things are not good here in Laboria.
Why?
The fighting has spread to almost everywhere in the country, which means it's just not safe for you to come back right now.
Oh, no. Dad, please.
I'm sorry, Dan. I'm sorry. You know, nobody wanted you to come home more than me. But it's better that you stay where you are.
But, Dad, surely it can't be that bad. People protest against the government all the time in Laboria.
This time, it's different. The rebels have gained more power, and we're part of the establishment. The Kanyama family has always cooperated with the government. We need to watch out, Dan. It's better you stay in Kisimba until things calm down.
But, Dad...
No buts, Dan. That's my final word. You're staying at Bongo Academy until I tell you otherwise.
Okay. But, Dad, what about you?
Don't worry.
And Mom?
Don't worry about us. We're fine. Bye, son.
Dad, wait.
I wish the school day was over already. Bongo Academy really sucks.
Hey, Nikki. Are you okay?
I'm fine.
Why are you sitting there alone? Cheer up. You won't get detention for making too much noise. That's for sure. Come on. Come and join us over here.
Maybe later.
Ha. Well, maybe you will get detention for being boring.
Nikki.
Wait, I'm coming. What are you doing at the school fence? I told you not to visit me at school.
I came to collect my money.
What do you think the principal will do to me if she sees me with a
what? A drug dealer? You should have thought about that before smoking my ganja. Not paying when you should.
Please, I only have 50 cents on me right now. I will pay you when I get more, I promise.
I'm not leaving until I get my money. You smoke, you pay.
Please, Master, you know my family. You know we have money. It won't be too hard for me to get my hands on $10.
Then why haven't you paid already?
The watchman is looking. Please go, I will pay you tomorrow, I promise.
You better.
Hey, you! Young man! Why are you standing by pants? Get away from pants!
Okay, soldier. That was close.
Kadu, my brother, it feels so good to be home and to play outside again.
Yes, Manda, it's really great. Maybe our sister Masi can join us when she comes home from school.
Masi can't play football.
Well, maybe she has learned since we have been away. I just wish Dad was here.
Me too. Mom says we'll come back though.
But why did we move from that nice big house in Pale?
Mom said she couldn't afford to pay for it, now that Dad's not here.
Okay, come on. So pass the ball. I'm going to score.
Okay, Kadu. Look, I've left the goal wide open for you. Wow. You kick like a girl. You can't even score when there's no one in goal. Our sister Marcy could play better than that.
You are mean, Banda. As mean as the boys in their mines in Laboria.
Kadu, we are not allowed to talk about the mines. That's what Auntie Lena and that man Kanyama told us.
But they're not here. They can't hear us.
Maybe they have spies, like in the movies. Come on, it's raining. Let's run home before it gets soaked.
And now, a reminder of the stories that we've covered for you. A car laden with explosives was found in Nairobi one day after two policemen were killed by a car bomb. Nigeria's President Goodluck Jonathan meets with state governors to discuss the worsening security situation in the country. We've also been hearing from anti-apartheid icons like the late former South African President Nelson Mandela, who struggled for many years to see a free South Africa. Africa Link returns tomorrow at the same time with me, Isaac Mugabe, in Bonn.